That's the great Amy Winehouse. Back to Black from her album of the same title, which incredibly was released over 10 years ago, if you can wrap your mind around that. A legendary record, the sophomore album from Amy Winehouse, also her last. And it's an incredible work, and there's an entire book that has been written about this album and about Amy Winehouse. It's called Back to Black, Amy Winehouse's Only Masterpiece. The author of the book is a man named Donald Brackett. He's a pop culture journalist, and we have a link to information, all that stuff, on our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. By the way, Nick DiGilio here, back on 720 WGN. Yes, Two for Tuesday coming up if you want to jump in and get your requests in. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. So let's welcome Donald Brackett to the show this morning. And Donald, welcome to the show.
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
Good, 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 good. Let's start with your background. When did you start writing about pop culture and music and things like that?
Well, my first couple of books were 2007, 2008. I wrote a book on the history of Fleetwood Mac, a band that I followed for about 45 years. And then I did one on singer-songwriters in general called Dark Mirror, This Pathology of the Singer-Songwriter. And in the second one, I had a chapter on Amy Winehouse, and that then evolved. I became fascinated, obsessed even with her and with her story, and got to write the book. And I'm amazed that it's 10 years later, 5 years since she passed away at the tender age of 27.
And that, and of course, that age in the world of music is cursed, you know, or whatever they call it. Yeah.
Well, the performers are certainly cursed, and singer-songwriters of a certain kind that go into a really deep place, personal place, and share their suffering with us to this degree, often don't survive that suffering. But it is 10 years, and a massive pop record, pop hit. This album. And it was particularly ironic because it wasn't intended to be a pop record at all, really. And it originally merged jazz, blues, R&B, funk, ska, soul music, hip-hop, even some reggae, plus the wall of sound music of the 60s girl group. And then something else that doesn't have a name that Amy brought to it, which was utterly unique, doesn't really have many equals sonically. I was amazed by just how gorgeous the record was produced. And really, the album is the book is about the album as opposed to her personal life.
Right.
That got more than enough coverage. It was pretty sad.
No, you know, I mean, and I found that really refreshing, Donald. That you know, it was more about the art and her talent than about the struggles that she went through. That's been documented enough.
Yeah, I think even the documentary film, although it was good and won an Oscar, it didn't focus enough on the music for me at all. Mm-hmm. What made her special, what inspired her, what her roots were. So this is all about her historical
WGN
roots.
WGN Traffic, Northbound Bishop.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead, continue.
Okay, and especially about the brilliant producers, and Mark Ronson in particular, that made it what it was, and the backup band that she borrowed, the Dap Kings, a phenomenal soul band. And it's just as amazing to me sonically as a music critic as it is when I first heard it a decade ago. And 5 years ago, of course, she passed away. But what was unique about her talent was that she was a torch song singer in the classic vein, you know, of old Billie Holiday, Dinah Washington, Nina Simone, Anita O'Day. And as I name those singers, all of whom sang very sad love songs about breaking up, trying to get back together, all of them had an equally troubled life for some reason.
Yeah.
Her music is quite remarkable in that it's for the 21st century, and particularly young people, she had a strange magic. And the creative genius of the instrumentation, the arrangement, the orchestration, especially the record production, which was done in an analog manner in the same way that soul music was done from the 60s.
Right.
It was just a complete mystery, but we fell for her. Even with the soap opera swirling around her.
Yeah, she was an amazing artist. Let me, really quickly, I want to go back to Dark Mirror. Who else was featured in that book, and what is it about this commonality between the singer-songwriters?
Well, I was struck by just my own interest in singer-songwriters exploring it. I was noticing that they all had one thing in common, apart from talent with expressing themselves, their emotions. They were kind of empaths. They expressed really deep personal emotions, but we all identified with the way they told their personal stories, that they became universal. I mean, the best one is Bob Dylan, probably, but Joni Mitchell was in there, Marianne Faithfull, Amy had a chapter, Simon and Garfunkel. And they just go to a very deep personal place, but they splash somehow into a universal location. And they we feel they're telling our story. I mean, there's a chapter in there on Lennon and McCartney. They're probably the best example of a perfect pop group that told personal stories in a universal way.
Right.
But I really also got interested in the mix of styles that she played with, Amy Winehouse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you blend together the girl groups like the Shangri-Las, the Supremes, the Shirelles, the Exciters and the Ronettes, of course, especially the Phil Spector sound, and particular Mark Ronson, the way he produced this record, he shared her love of these 60 girl groups ethos and their heartbreaking sounds. I mean, it's all about her personal love affair breaking up, and she kind of sank to a bottom and listened to these girl groups, and they, the result was this phenomenal, heartbreaking, but gorgeous music. It didn't just consist of, in a sense, it was made in only about 10 days. That's the other remarkable thing. There was something magical about the way Ronson, as a producer, dealt with this somewhat fragile, cracking up individual. I mean, her first record came out in 2003 when she was 20.
Right.
This record came out in 2006. She was only 23. And she obviously had some emotional challenges as kind of a child. I think of her often like Judy Garland in a way, that kind of artist.
Yeah.
She didn't remarkably meet the backup band that Mark Ronson used, the Dap Kings, until after the record was made. In other words, she sang these almost like personal diary entries or journal entries of this girl's heartbroken diary. And he produced this majestic, remarkable piece of work, echoing the sounds that she wanted to hear, you
yeah.
know, which is the Phil Spector sound.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting, the difference between, because the first time I ever heard Amy Winehouse, and then I saw her, I was like, she looks like, she doesn't look at all like what I thought she was. You know, there's
oh, God,
this.
God, no.
No. And I, when I first heard her voice and I, you know, I, first of all, I didn't think she was white. And
I know,
and she, yeah. And I didn't think she was going to be just this little white petite girl, very,
yeah,
very
like
young,
a 98 pound girl, very young,
yeah.
Very naive. The thing that got to me, she channeled this remarkable spirit through her voice that, you know, she kind of shared with Billie Holiday and Dinah Washington, the same kind of deep, throaty, sad but beautiful music. But the strange thing about her is when you see a concert of her, like she did one in 2007 that was filmed as a documentary, and the title of it was You Know I'm No Good, one of her songs.
Yeah.
In between the songs, where you're transported into this unbelievably deep, magical, almost mystical place emotionally, she chats with the audience in this goofy Cockney accent,
yep.
which is this young girl from East Camden in London, and you have no idea how she turns that on and off, but in the next song, she suddenly gets transformed into this unbelievably magical place. It's quite remarkable. I think she was a sort of a medium in that way. She was just channeling something phenomenal. She grew up with a lot of this soul, jazz, and blues music in her home, and I think she was just reaching to this very deep, dark, obviously, place, but transforming it through that experience. She was kind of earthy and quite naive, actually. She was totally untutored. She didn't learn to sing. I mean, she was an anti-star. She didn't want to be a star, but she had the same power as, you know, stars like Judy Garland, Barbara Streisand, Edith Piaf, even to a certain extent.
Yeah.
She's kind of a French version of Edith, of Amy Winehouse. But she also has a kind of Diana Ross feeling, sort of diva-like, but just incredibly powerful. She was sort of Dusty Springfield-like, too.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. It reminds me of her as well.
Oh, yeah. She really reached back to her childhood, but certainly the 60s. And what was ironic about her music was that the 21st century, when she came out, 2006, this album, especially young audiences, it was a kind of post-hip-hop age where hip-hop and even rap, some of which are mixed into the style of this record, had entered the mainstream, and people, young people particularly, weren't familiar with the torch song tradition.
Right.
Certainly not with Billie Holiday or, you know, any of these other artists as Dusty Springfield. So that what she was doing was seemed completely unique. One of the reasons for wanting to write the book, apart from evading the personal tragedy of the soap opera and just looking at the music, was to kind of explain to the popular culture that she didn't just drop out of nowhere from a spaceship. She felt like that when you watched her, as you described, something you couldn't, it was just indescribable.
Yeah.
But she does come from this long tradition that she, to a certain extent, recycles. So it seemed utterly fresh and unique, and it was, but it also has these really deep roots in the culture of certainly the torch song tradition.
Yeah. Listen, Donald, we got to take a break, okay?
Okay.
All right, 1 second. Donald Brackett is with us. He is the author of a terrific book called Back to Black, Amy Winehouse's only masterpiece. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about Amy Winehouse, the album, and much more. It's Nick DeGilio at 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. That, of course, was the music of Amy Winehouse. Well, and the latest book is called Back to Black, Amy Winehouse's Only Masterpiece. The author is Donald Brackett, and he joins us to talk more this morning on WGN. Welcome back, Donald.
Hi, Nick.
Hi. All right, I just wanted to ask you, what did something happen to Amy Winehouse artistically between the release of Frank and Back to Black where she... Did she become more confident? What happened between those two records?
Well, the way she describes it is her heart was broken and she became an alcoholic.
Okay.
Essentially, she had a terrible love affair that broke up. He went back to his old girlfriend and then she went back to black, which is essentially the blackout state. But an utter transformation took place between Frank and Back to Black.
Yeah.
In 2003, she was kind of one of an up-and-coming, young, especially British jazz, retro jazz tradition. Jamie Cullen was quite well known at the time. Katie Mandula was another. And she was sort of lumped in with this school of young retro jazz singers and sort of pop singers. She didn't like pop music and she didn't like being associated with them. She then went through this transformative experience where, among other things, she got into an unhealthy lifestyle. But she wanted to evade, get away from that pop star, young jazzy chicks style. She didn't like it at all. So she just embraced the girl groups of the 60s, soul music, not even quite blues music, but it's just more like the Phil Spector wall of sound feeling that she wanted. And that's what she transformed herself into. But she accidentally really met the producer, Mark Ronson. Salim Raimi produced the first record in 2003, which was fine, and it's got a lot of great stuff in it, but it's not a masterpiece. And that's why I call this her only masterpiece, because it does something really significant and majestic, magnificent, you know, all kinds of superlatives. But she met him, the label Island sent him to New York, and they met each other, and they hit it off. And he said, what kind of music do you like? And she started talking about the Chiffons, the Shirelles, the Shangri-Las, the Supremes, that kind of stuff. And he said, well, I like that kind of stuff, too. And he was very young, a little older than her, but... And they were walking down the street at one point, and this is a kind of fabled tale now, but she said, well, you know, people are giving me a hard time. They want to make me go to rehab. And she waved her hand in the air and said, but I say no, no, no.
Uh-huh.
And he looked at her and he said, you know, this is a kind of personal subject for you, but that sounds like a great pop song to me. And he said, let's go to the studio. And they literally went there, and overnight worked out the rhythms and the tones of the sound. He said, go home and write that as lyrics. And then he produced this booming, echoing sound on it that was quite remarkable. I don't know if I can't be the only one that feels guilty about reveling in that song, though.
I mean, no,
the
I know.
Video itself.
Yeah, it is. You're absolutely right. You feel a little bit mixed on it, you know.
Oh, totally. In fact, we were singing along with her, saying, yeah, you know, go for it. Don't go. But, I mean, it's kind of that's a part of the irony of this. But so she transformed herself through Mark Ronson's mentoring into this just astonishing technical achievement. And the Dap Kings, the band that plays on the record, they were a phenomenal soul band that plays really authentic analog soul from the 70s and 60s. And she borrowed that group from Sharon Jones, who recently passed away, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, she passed away a couple of weeks ago.
She's in my next book is actually on Sharon Jones, by the way.
Wow.
So I do a chapter in this book on the only masterpiece of Amy Winehouse, on the Dap Kings and what made them unique and the production style.
Right.
And, it, you know, I just just needed to celebrate what made her a phenomenal talent. You can't define that kind of thing any more than you could, you know, in the case of Marianne Faithfull or Joni Mitchell. But it's a very deep personal emotional place. I think, to me, it's the sonic achievement of it, though, the way it's produced and how it sounds.
You know, it's amazing. You're talking about just the production of this record, and you mentioned earlier it was recorded in 10 days, and mm-hmm. and the Dap Kings weren't there when she recorded. Just the fact that it turned out the way it did is astonishing.
Oh, totally. That's one of the things I celebrate in the book.
Yeah.
It's just, I think as much an achievement of Mark Ronson's part, because he had this very fragile girl just broken up and had a rough life and that kind of thing, and she sang these things in the booth as almost, like I said, diary entries. And then he went away and produced with the Dap Kings the sound that he layered and echoed and used multiple, all of the instrumentation, the orchestration, he added the strings. She didn't even want strings on the record. Some of it has astonishing orchestration and arrangements, which is what made all those girl groups like the Shirelles and the Ronettes especially so significant. Their mixture of pop, you know, plunging, propulsive pop music with phenomenal orchestration. She didn't want that, and he put it on secretly without her knowing it and then played it to her, and she started crying and said, well, this is amazing. And so it's hard to emphasize, without going into the soap opera part, how unique their collaboration really was. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, she came back and heard the record and what he had done. I mean, they communicated, obviously, back and forth, but there was this really significant void in which this magic took place, and Ronson was really the master of that magic.
Yeah, and he's gone on. I mean, obviously, he's a relatively legendary producer, but you know, the past couple of years with the Uptown Funk, he's really gone on to become just a massive star.
Yeah, massive with Bruno Mars, and
yeah.
You know, he won a Grammy, and he's now like really at the king of the castle. He himself really does acknowledge, to tell you the truth, he has said that he wasn't really hitting it that big, and he was ready to give up. He was, first of all, a DJ in New York and
right.
just playing records. But when he met her, she transformed his entire life. After that, it was basically just zooming up. So there's a certain sad, you know, irony to his connection to her as
yeah.
well. But he basically said that, you know, he didn't make her career. She made his, you know, and then just disappeared yeah. from the earth.
They had
a few pieces that they were going to make for a record after this, for the third one, but by that point she wasn't really in enough of a healthy condition
yeah.
enough to make it. She was offered to make a James Bond theme song, which is what happens if you become a big enough star. The first thing you do is you do a James Bond theme song.
Right, right.
But she couldn't really pull it off, and that indicates how tragic her difficulties
yeah.
were, really.
Donald, before we let you go, what do you think is Amy Winehouse's legacy, particularly with this record?
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
I think it's the ability to transform past musical traditions, to inject something utterly your own and unique and indefinable, but to transform there's a kind of an alchemy. And I would say she was an alchemist. She wasn't fully aware of how she did it. And she's not a very sophisticated person. She was very simple, but I think she was an alchemist and managed to express deep human feelings in a way that can touch everybody and feel like that's our story. That's
yeah.
our song.
Yeah. Yeah, well, she was an amazing talent, and the book is great, Donald. And you know, it's one of the few books that I've read that really concentrates on one specific piece of art, and you know, and I thought that was a unique way of telling her story, and it's a
yeah, her story
book.
Does come through the
yeah.
themes that are in the record, but it definitely is a very personal document for
yeah.
sure, and I think it's become a classic. I think I would sum it up by saying that she's produced a classic, and that's not something that's necessarily classical, but something that transcends the time in which it was produced,
mm-hmm.
and something that influences everything that follows it.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah.
And I think she changed the sonic landscape in a way well, since then, of course, a figure like Adele has become huge.
Yes.
And a lot of other female singers of her, you know, her soul style, she just basically broke ground for everybody and then left.
Right, right. Listen, Donald, really fascinating talking with you. And I know that you're working on another Fleetwood Mac book, correct?
Yes, to celebrate their 50th year, believe it or not. Oh, yeah, I know. They started in 67 as a psychedelic blues band in Britain, as you know.
Right.
And they went through remarkable transformation.
Oh my God! And the personal interactions in that band are just are legendary. I'd love to have you back on to talk about Fleetwood Mac sometime. Is that okay?
Anytime, Nick.
Okay. Thanks very much, Donald.
Take care.
There's Donald Brackett. He is the pop culture journalist and the author of Back to Black, Amy Winehouse's only masterpiece. It's a terrific book. If you're an Amy Winehouse fan, and you should be, you should get this book. Really interesting and fascinating stuff and really enlightening. Good stuff. All right, we'll take a quick break here. We got the news coming up next on 720 WGN.